the grill. He boiled the shells with a jar of minced garlic. This is going to make the best lobster risotto tomorrow. There was a lot of lobster meat left. Hank put it in a bag and walked down to the moose meat locker. The room had a few feet of shoveled snow on the floor and made a fantastic refrigerator. People rolled into their already established routines, leaving the dinner circle to start their fires and warm their bedrooms. Children were tucked into their beds. Todd and Ahmed spent an hour prepping bread dough for the next day. Dan, Greg, and Rebecca sat in chairs next to fire pits. Rebecca was wrapped in a plaid cashmere blanket with frilly ends. Her only visible appendage was an arm sticking out of the chair to hold Greg's hand. The teens were on a folding love seat. Dan sat in a green camp chair. He was fascinated by their story. "If you had come south, you would have found me," he told Greg. "But it sounds like you did better going north." John was exhausted. It had been a long day. He found Matt and asked him for a moment. "Matt," he began, too serious for what he wanted to tell his son.
"Jesus, Dad, what is it?"
Matt looked worried.
"No, no. Well, this is going to sound weird, but Solange and I are going to start seeing each other."
He put his hand on Matt's shoulder. "I wanted to tell you because, well..."
"Seriously?
She wants to date an old guy like you?" Matt could not keep a straight face.
"Now, wait a second.
Dad, it's great.
She's great.
I hope you're happy. We all need to be happy. Because I think our lives are going to be filled with a lot of work." He gave his dad a soft punch in the stomach.
"Way to go. You're shooting well below your handicap with her."
"What is that supposed to mean?" John knew what it meant.
"I'm just kidding."
"Well, not really, but you know."
"Hey, it's great.
If Craig is upset, I'll set him straight." He gave his dad a hug. "Now go get some sleep. You look like hell." "It's been a great day, but there were some lows as well. I will tell you it was long. Very, very long. If you could make sure your brother doesn't stay up too late, I'm going to hit it."
John slapped Matt on the back and walked up the road. Matt expected him to turn and go into the big house, sleeping in the study with Hank and Paul. His father walked two houses up and went into the one Solange was using.
"That sly dog," Matt mumbled. "Good for him."
Matt saw the group moving from the fire pit into the house.
"Karen wants to go to sleep. We're moving the party inside," Greg told him. "Stay up a while."
"Did you see Dad?
He and Solange are a thing now," Matt replied.
Karen collapsed, fully dressed, on the queen bed in the RV. She tried to listen as the boys walked away, but she was too tired, and they walked too fast. She looked up at the stars through her little skylight and thanked whatever brought her into her current situation. Her eyes fluttered, and she fell asleep instantly, barely pulling a comforter over herself to keep warm.
47. Karen woke up to voices outside her window. She was disoriented and looked around to find her bearings. She was in a large bed in a cold room. Her side and stomach ached. "I'm in an RV in New Hampshire," she said to herself. "Okay, it wasn't a dream. I'm really here." She often dreamt about escaping the house in Boston for a safe home away from Ryan. She looked under the comforter and saw she was still fully dressed. She decided to change into sweats, ones she brought up from Boston in a duffel in the other room. She changed and went outside to see who the voices were coming from. Todd and Ahmed were talking about bread, sports, and other meaningless things.
"I hope we didn't wake you. I didn't know there was anyone in the RV," Ahmed apologized.
"That's okay."
Karen paused. She was horrible with names.
"Ahmed, and this is Todd. I lobbied for name tags at one point, shirts with name badges sewn into them, but no one went for it."
Ahmed took a sip of coffee.
"Where did you get that?"
Karen needed her coffee.
"I so want that."
She was forward and funny. She fit into the group immediately.
You need to walk up this street to the end. Take a right. Second house is a white cottage, smoke coming out of the top. Walk in, take off your shoes, put them in the bin. You'll be rewarded with coffee. Don't take off your shoes? Rebecca will throw you out. Drink all the coffee? Todd's wife will throw you out. Todd laughed at Ahmed's directions. Rebecca is the girl, right? The teen? She's in charge? Karen asked, confused. More than you know. Todd smiled at her, sipping his own coffee. It's her house. Kick the shoes into the bin. Karen thanked both of them for the advice and walked up to the cottage. The road was clear of snow, but wet from streams of thaw running down in all directions. She could see her breath as it blew into the morning air. She looked at the houses to her left. Pale gray smoke puffed out of chimneys in the first four homes. Karen stopped at the top of the road, turned right, and walked to a sign that read Webster Cottage. She knocked meekly before opening the door. Hello? She asked. Come on in, Melanie called from the living room. Shoes in the bin. Coffee and eggs in the back. I'm Melanie. We met last night. Hello again, Melanie. She nodded. Karen. There really are eggs? OMG. Karen put her shoes in an overflowing bin. Melanie was surrounded. She had three kids on the couch with her, one still asleep holding a blanket and two playing checkers. There were two older girls on the opposite couch reading. All of the kids looked up and said hello and waved. Karen remembered none of their names. She waved back with a broad smile. A fire burned in the fireplace. The chill Karen felt since she woke disappeared. She walked through the living room and into a dining room area. There was a fire in a fireplace here, too, and more young people sitting at a table. John and Solange were there, and they both said good morning. Look who finally got up. You Boston people know how to sleep. You're the first one up of the two of you. Karen spoke to them for a second, said good morning to the people around the table. A Tony, Greg, Matt, Rebecca, and Craig. I wish I was better with names, Karen thought to herself. She pushed through the dining room and into the kitchen. It was also full of activity. The older woman Karen met briefly the night before was scrambling eggs in a giant cast-iron skillet on a wood stove. There were two coffee makers working off of a solar panel-charged electric hub. A tall older man, again someone who Karen met the night before, was slicing bread for toast. Good morning, Karen. The older woman smiled. You're just in time for some fresh eggs. Peter has a batch of toast in the wood stove. Grab a plate from the stack. Come on over. Coffee cups are on the counter. Milk and sugar are on the table. Don't miss the sausage patties. She pointed a large spatula towards a plate of cooked sausage. There were people sitting at a table. John's brothers, Paul, and Hank. Yes, Karen said to herself as she recalled their names. They had three very young children on a bench at the table with them, two girls and a boy. Karen assembled her breakfast and asked if she could join them. Of course, Hank told her. We're explaining the weather to the kids, how snow is just cold rain, that sort of stuff. Talking to kids was right up Karen's alley. Why are you asking, honey? She did not use the little girl's name. Karen depended on charts hooked to the foot of a bed for names. Rebecca said there might be some snow next week, then it was going to get cold again. The little boy who responded was sitting between two girls. Karen guessed he was between 4 and 5 years old, possibly a very big three. It's pretty late for snow, but it could happen, Karen said, nodding to the children. Paul jumped in. If Rebecca and Greg could live by themselves for the whole winter, we don't have to worry about some spring storm. You know what we call that? Snow day. The kids giggled. Karen noticed how thin they were. Peanut butter toast is coming up, kids. Peter walked over with a plate of toast slathered in peanut butter. Anyone need refills on milk? There were head shakes of no as each kid grabbed the toast. The morning reminded Karen of her family reunions. The house was full of life, crowded with teens, preschoolers, and adults. She felt safe and happy for the first time in almost a year. The kids finished their breakfast, said thank you to Jamie and Peter,
Karen caught their names, finally, and ran out. Karen turned to Paul.
Is this what mornings are like?
I'm not sure what you mean, he said back.
Well, like everyone eating together and talking and working nicely. Everyone gets along so well.
Yeah, it's been like this for a while. You have to realize, we've only been together for 2 or 3 weeks, but it seems to be working.
Why?
We weren't like this in Boston. She did not say anything else. Paul heard the story of Lucinda's suicide and Ryan's departure. It was a bad situation in Boston.
Well, so far, that's how it is here. We have a task board, essential things that need to get done, along with a list of if-you-have-time things, longer-term projects. It's up in the dining room. If there's anything that strikes your fancy, have at it. It's your first day. We'll let it slide if you don't milk the goats. Besides, that's already done. Paul gave her a pat on the back and slid his chair away from the table.
Yep, you gotta get up early to milk the goats. He used his best farmer accent for the word goats. I'm heading over to the dairy farm to check on the cows and pigs with Kelly, the veterinarian. You're welcome to join us. Or again, take a day to rest and get used to the area.
You seem to enjoy children, Hank said from behind his mug of coffee. Emily and Melanie use the town library for school, teaching the kids how to read and write. They love guest lecturers or permanent helpers. Melanie is switching to farm duty when the season changes.
Karen nodded at him.
Do you think that other guy you lived with will show up? Hank asked, curious for her perspective.
No, Karen said quietly.
No, I don't, and I hope he stays away. He was mean, a rotten person, and while Dan told me we needed Ryan to survive, well, that's not true now. Even if he could help us, he's not worth the price.
I agree. Hank let the topic die. He was there when Dan told the true story of their last hours at the Boston apartment. It was different than the one Karen wanted known.
After John and Solange left, it got ugly, Dan told the group in the living room when Karen had gone to bed. I told them a lie this afternoon when they came back, because Karen asked me to. But here's what happened. I went upstairs, and Ryan has Karen up against a wall. He was yelling at her, screaming in her face. He took a sip of wine as he told the story. When we first got together back in October, well, Ryan and I were talking about our survival strategy. Karen cut in on us, said something against Ryan. He slapped her across the face and told her to shut up. Rebecca put her hand over her mouth and gasped. Is it okay if I tell this in front of her? Dan looked to the adults.
I'm okay. Just stunned, Rebecca told him.
Hank and Paul nodded, giving the okay to continue. I was stunned, too, and without hesitation I popped him one in the stomach. I don't punch people in the face, because I don't punch people, but also because it's a good way to break or injure my hand, and I was so used to taking care of my hands. Dan could tell he was getting off track. Anyway, I punched him so hard he went to the ground. I didn't hold back. You don't slap anyone, but you definitely don't slap a woman for speaking. I picked him up. I could tell he was hurt, really hurt, and it was killing him to stand up straight. But I held that bastard up and looked him in the eyes and said, if you touch her again, I'll kill you. Do you understand? I won't kill you quickly. I'll beat you and leave you out in the cold to die like you deserve. Dan shook his head. I'm not a bully, or even a violent person. But I could tell this Ryan was a piece of work. I kept him in line for the rest of the time. He still called Karen a fat bitch, or told her to shut up, and I'd ask him to stop, but really, what was I supposed to do? I needed him to survive. Karen needed him to survive. We were in hell. We're stuck with a total asshole who hates women, and our fourth group member is insane. Literally, mentally insane. Lucinda did not sleep at night. She'd wake me up thinking she'd heard something. She never left the apartment. He paused. I debated leaving every single day. I wasn't living anymore. I was cobbling together a horrible existence. Survival, but not life.
He paused for another sip of wine. Back to yesterday. John and Solange leave. I come upstairs. Ryan's screaming at Karen right in her face, calling her a traitor, bitch, ingrate, whatever. I pull him back, tell him to calm down. Lucinda is crying, screaming for us to stop. I get the situation under control. Lucy stays in the kitchen like she always did. I'm on a couch with Karen. Ryan is in a chair. He doesn't want to go, doesn't trust Solange and John. I tell him I'm leaving. Karen agrees. Lucinda starts ranting about inviting John and Solange to live with us. She's telling us she won't go back to the cruise ship where all the people are dead. Something so bizarre. How we can all stay here in Boston. How none of us will get sick if we just stay in Boston. I don't know. It didn't make any sense. Ryan is seething. All of a sudden, he looks at Karen and says, "The next time we're alone, I'm going to kill you. You better pray Dan stays with you forever, 'cause I'm going to wring your fat neck." I mean, seriously, he's looking right at her. Karen is one of the sweetest people. She was a pediatric nurse. Who hates a pediatric nurse? I was floored. What the hell is wrong with this guy? Karen is done. She knew she was out. So she stood up and walked over to him, looked him square in the eye and said, "I hope you try." He kicked her right in the stomach. He was wearing socks. If he had boots on, Karen would be dead. He paused. Everyone stared at him. I pointed my finger and told him to go. I told him to pack his things and get as far away from us as possible, to take one of the cars and leave. As I'm talking, I feel a breeze from the balcony door being opened. I see Lucy walking towards the railing. She hadn't gone out there, ever. I knew this wasn't good. Karen was coughing on the floor. Ryan is looking at me like he's going to kill me. I jump up and run towards Lucy. She's at the rail of the balcony. She looks at me, and in the most even and rational voice I've ever heard her use, she says, "Dan, thank you, but I'm done." She dove over the railing, kept her arms at her side. And she was gone. I was standing at the edge looking at her when I hear the door slam behind me. Ryan locked me out on the porch. He kicked Karen a few more times in the stomach and sighed until she passes out and he leaves. Karen didn't wake up for a while. She crawled over and let me into the house. 30 minutes later, when some of the pain pills kick in and Karen is able to stand, I radioed Solange. Hank thought of the story as he watched Karen eat her breakfast. He thought about how excited she must feel to be out of that house in Boston, away from some random abuser with whom she had the misfortune of surviving a global plague. Karen sat at the table, forking eggs and sausage into her mouth. She smiled. Smiling was part of her training. No matter what is happening, good news or bad news to the patient, painful procedure or taking a temperature, grin and put on a good face. Tears welled in her eyes. The warm liquid dripped down her face onto her plate. She was finally safe. She was free of Ryan. There were good people around her, and there was a life ahead of her. Hank drank his coffee and let her have the moment. He saw the tears. He leaned towards her and whispered, "This is real. We're real. You're safe. Enjoy it." Karen put her hands to her mouth. She moved them to cover her eyes and wept. She laughed while she cried. Her tears were of joy and salvation. "I guess she liked the eggs," Peter said to Jamie. Hank heard the comment and laughed. John popped through the door to see what was so funny. "What's going on in here?" "It has been a while since Karen enjoyed eggs and sausage. She's a little emotional about it," Jamie told him. "And she's realizing she doesn't have to live with an abusive asshole anymore," Hank added. Karen was too overwhelmed to speak. She laughed and cried, waving to John. She mouthed thank you to him. "Well, as long as I'm here, I'll take some more eggs. I think everyone is up that is going to get up." John let Jamie spoon more eggs on his plate. He forked 2 more sausage patties and took more toast. Peter filled his cup with coffee and followed John back into the dining room. The kids had left to go on a firewood run, allowing Peter to join John and Solange at the table.
"You two went to bed so early I didn't get a chance to hear the rundown of the airport. You found 3 fuel trucks? 2 planes? That's the story?"
"We did," Solange confirmed. "The runway is clear."
"I'll go down to take a look. If we get fuel in and the engines turn over, well, I bet we can extend our time here as long as we want. Within reason, of course."
The old pilot sipped his coffee.
"I need a day before I go back down there," John told him. "I'm tired and sore."
The eggs were fantastic, and he offered Solange some of his seconds. She shook her head.
"One thing," John told him. "It's a mess at the airport. The parking garage was converted into a military barracks. There are tents full of bodies. There are scavenging birds and animals. It smells like rotting flesh. If Solange and I are not in the group, know that you want to avoid the front of the airport. Go straight to the planes and fuel trucks."
Peter nodded. He had seen some things in his life. He was not squeamish. But there was no need to invite those images into his memory.
"I'd take Tony. That kid knows how to jumpstart vehicles, and I bet you're going to have to jump the battery on that plane."
John talked through his toast.
"You're also going to have to figure out how to get into that monster."
"I know how to do that, don't worry. You found the plane and the fuel. The rest is up to me."
Peter thought about the jumpstart.
"You just leave the rest up to me."
He leaned back in his chair, kicking his feet straight out in front of him. He was thinking about cows, pigs, goats, chickens, supplies, and most importantly, people.
"I think I can give Antonio some flying lessons over the next few weeks. Make him a pretty serviceable co-pilot."
A wry smile crept across Peter's face as a plan formed in his head. 48. Dan woke late. He rolled over and looked at his watch, placed neatly on his nightstand the night before. 10 a.m. The fire he lit the night before was out long ago. His room was cold. He was warm under the covers of his bed, his knit cap securely on his head. He faced 2 problems. He was hungry, and he had to go to the bathroom. He ran to the bathroom outside of his room and bolted back to his bed.
1 out of 2 isn't bad, he thought to himself.
Dan pulled a pillow over his head, rolled away from the bright sun streaming through the window, and went back to sleep. 49. The chores posted on the daily calendar in the dining room were done. The firewood truck was filled and parked on Choate Road. The goats were milked and fed. The chickens were fed and the eggs collected. Bread was baked and cooling. Water was boiled for drinking, and the tanks of the RVs were filled for showering. There was no fishing, hunting, or trapping expedition for the day, as there was lobster and moose for both meals. The kids were at the library until 12:30, free to enjoy the rest of the afternoon. Matt and Avery used a snowblower to clear a set of tennis courts the day before. They left to play on the newly cleared and dry surface. Meredith was never far from Avery, and asked to tag along. 12 people quickly planned to use the tennis courts or watch their friends play. It was not the date Matt hoped it would be. Lunch sizzled on the grill, thinly sliced moose steaks pounded tender and served in baguettes. Todd put out jars of roasted red peppers, homemade mayonnaise, and scavenged steak sauce. Greg and Rebecca were early to lunch. They made a large sandwich and snuck away before the crowd came from school and the cottage. They went to a 1-room coach house they kept secret from the rest of the survivors. Not even Paul or Hank knew about the private spot. It was a charming little place about 1/2 mile away from Choate Road. It had a half bath, day bed, couch, desk, and fireplace that warmed the room. There was firewood neatly stacked against the side of the cottage next to the sliding glass door. Upon arrival, Greg lit the starter log he brought under his arm and loaded the wood box next to the fireplace with the wood from outside.
"It's not too bad in here,"
Rebecca said to Greg as he made his second trip in from the woodpile. I think the skylight lets enough sun in to warm it up a bit. She looked at him. I still want the fire. No kidding, he replied. She took off her backpack and emptied the contents of their picnic on the coffee table in front of the couch. They had the steak sandwich and two bottles of water. Not a huge offering, but certainly enough for the two of them. Instead of sitting down, she pulled a few logs from the wood bin and placed them on the now-burning starter log. The dry wood caught immediately, popping as it burned. Greg dropped a third armload of wood into the bin, an adequate supply for their picnic lunch and an afternoon of relaxation. He pulled off his work gloves and set them down next to the bin. He walked over to the sliding door and shut it. He untied his boots, set them by the door, and finally sat down next to Rebecca on the couch. He leaned over and kissed her. They embraced for a few moments. Their lips unlocked, and she buried her face into his shoulder. I miss you, she said into his sweater, a blue cashmere she picked out for him at one of the stores in town. I know. I miss you, too. I miss us. They leaned back in the couch, holding hands. They enjoyed being together. Alone together. It had been a week since they were alone. I love your family. She sat up after a few minutes. They're great. Your uncles are cool. Your dad is nice. Your brothers and cousins are awesome. I like everyone. I love everyone. She bit into her sandwich. I especially love Todd's cooking, she said. But you don't love them all the time, he added. It's not even that. It's like we're all together all the time. We sleep in a house with 10 people. She ate more sandwich. I'm a kid, I get it. They look at me like I'm 13, which I am. But you and I were alone for a long time. We were on our own for months before we found each other, and months before anyone else came. I know. And, well, I was alone a lot before the death. My parents both worked at the store, and some days I would be by myself, and I got used to that lifestyle. Yep. He ate his sandwich as she spoke. So I don't know how you feel. I usually do, but I don't right now. She paused as she chewed. I'm usually much more in control of a situation. She put down her sandwich and looked at him. I'm hoping we, but I'll start with I, need to figure out a long-term solution to our living situation. I agree, he said through a mouthful of mousse. Greg put his sandwich on the paper plate she had brought for him and finished the bite in his mouth. He touched her hand, sliding his fingers into hers so their hands became one. It's we. Don't think it's ever not we. I love you. Yes, I'm a 15-year-old kid. Yes, to all the things you just mentioned. And yes, we have to figure out how the we fits into the tribe my Aunt Emily keeps talking about. He looked at her. She was a confident woman, not so much the young girl he met skipping out to her trash can 6 months ago. Her hair was long and hung down her shoulders and back. Greg used his free hand to touch the back of her head and run his fingers through the auburn locks. She closed her eyes and leaned forward so her head was resting on his shoulder again. She kept her eyes closed. I know everything I want to do. I can see how we're going to get the tribe to Hawaii, how we're going to make a life there. But it has to be on our terms when we get to Hawaii. We have to be able to live our own life, two of us, not 8 of us sleeping in a room together. It will be. He stroked her hair. We won't let them control us. He leaned back on the couch, putting his legs up. She snuggled on top of him, her eyes still closed, his arm around her. They enjoyed the moment, lying together, breathing together. So you seem to be hitting it off with Avery, Greg said, breaking the silence. I know. Isn't that funny? She is not my type. But maybe I don't have a type anymore. I mean, you're not my type. I am so your type, he said, lifting his head off the pillow to look at her. No, you're not. You're a jock, a popular kid. Sure, you're smart, but you're not the level of smart that I hung out with. First of all, let's be honest, your level of smart is kind of its own level. He chuckled at her false modesty. How many boyfriends did you have before me?
None.
She sat up with her elbows on his chest, her chin in her hands. And I didn't have a girlfriend, at least a serious one before you. So that means we're perfect for each other. And therefore, as you smart kids would say, each other's type.
Really?
Okay. She kissed him on the nose before sitting up. I'm finishing this sandwich. Greg sat up, too. He picked up his lunch.
You think we can get to Hawaii?
Yes, no question. She chewed and looked at the fire. Really? That simple. I pulled the specs on the Boeing 777. Peter is right. It has the capacity and the range. Your father found fuel. Peter is licensed to fly that jet. We're good.
How do you know he's licensed?
I asked him. He has his license for both a 747 and a 777. Either plane will work. I think he'd rather find a 747. It's smaller and probably easier for one man to handle. But again, either will work. The fuel should be fine. We're going to Hawaii.
See, 1 hour with me alone, and you're back to the old confident Rebecca.
Greg smiled at her, putting the last bite in his mouth.
That steak tasted so good. I had no idea how much I missed red meat. Squirrel and rabbits aren't the same thing. And Uncle Todd knows how to make bread.
He sat back and rubbed his belly. You're not my type, because I didn't have a type, she said to him, still looking at the fire.
I didn't have a lot of friends, Greg. You know that. I was too different, and that horrible disease took everything away. I gave up my childhood to be smart, to do well, to move on to medical school or get an engineering degree. Probably both, actually. I could handle the load.
She turned to look at him. I sacrificed more than any 7-year-old should be asked to, but I did it, and I didn't mind because I knew what was at the end. But look what happened. I don't have an ending, do I? I threw away being a third grader, skipping rope and playing with dolls. I lost all of that for nothing.
Come on. He rubbed her back.
No, it's fine. It's upsetting, but I get it. Life is like that. She put her hand on his leg. I got you. Whatever took everything away from me gave me you to make up for it. That sounds insane for a rational fact-based person like me to say, but I think I believe that through all this death and destruction and pain, we got each other. She fell into his arms. I love you, Greg. I didn't have a type. And if I did, it wasn't a handsome, baseball-playing, good-grade-getting, hard-working boy like you. But you're my type now. And I'm getting tired of sharing our time with everyone else.
He held her, and they watched the fire getting low. Greg stood to put a log on.
What if we promise each other this? He asked. When we get to Hawaii, we find a place, a little house, maybe close enough to everyone else, but still just ours. And we live like we're supposed to live. Together, the two of us. We're part of the tribe, but we get to be alone when we want to be.
I love your family, but I can't live with them in the same house.
I accept your offer. She was exhausted. Her words were coming slowly. Her eyelids fluttered, and there was a yawn at the end of her sentence. Rebecca let herself fall sideways onto the couch. Greg placed a soft blanket from a nearby chair over her.
Sleep tight.
He kissed her cheek. Rebecca awoke to the sound of Greg placing another log on the fire.
What time is it?
She asked him, stretching her arms and watching him head back to a big leather reclining chair.
That was the best sleep I've had in a week.
It's 4:30, sleepyhead. He sat in the chair reading old magazines.
I mean, fun afternoon away you planned for me. Why don't we sneak off so I can take a 4-hour nap?
I can't help it if you don't take naps. Mine was great. It was just what I needed. She sat up. You promised me a bungalow in Hawaii, and you guarded me for a nap. Rebecca wins. He gave her a look from his chair. Are you ready to go? We should get back.
You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to spend the days working with the group, doing our tasks, helping out, then come back here and be alone for the night.
I don't know, Greg replied. The Boston people just got here. That's a bold move.
I know it's not going to happen, but it's what I would like. I'm just saying it to you. I'm not asking you to do it.
It has been nice to sit down and read a magazine again. He held up a tabloid.
Do you remember when we cared about all of this stuff?
A celebrity couple smiled on the cover. The woman was pregnant, and there was a fake tear between the two people, signaling a breakup.
It's weird to think all of these people are dead.
Maybe they aren't dead, Rebecca told him. If Dan Couples is alive, maybe one of them made it.
Greg nodded.
You know, if we do stay here for a while, more than 2 weeks, I'll move over here with you. I can't take the summer camp lodging we have.
Yes, I'm 15, but does that mean I get put in the kids' house with everyone else?
Matt must feel the same way.
Sure, fun to see him. Love him and Craig, but we didn't share a room in Charleston. Why am I sharing a room now?
She stood and walked over to his chair, sitting on his lap and cuddling.
It's just the way it is right now. This is all temporary.
I know. He put his arms around her. You understand. I love a lot of the things we have with the new people, but I miss some of the things you and I enjoyed when it was just us.
Now you sound like me.
This is your family. Snap out of it, Dixon. She enjoyed his embrace for a few minutes.
Okay. Time to get back.
She got up from his lap. We probably need to help distribute firewood or make dinner or something. Let's not become freeloaders.
All right, just let me run through this one more time. I've had a few hours to stare at this half-bath. The sewer system is still there, right? If we can figure out a way to have water in the toilets, if the pipes running to the sewers aren't frozen or didn't burst this winter, we should be able to use the toilets, right?
Greg was determined to restore modern conveniences.
Yes, she told him, pulling on her shoes. What if I redirect the gutters on the houses into rain barrels, and we have the rain barrels fill the backs of the toilets after flushing? Sure, we'll have to fill the toilets manually with a spigot, but it's still better than going outside.
See? I knew I liked you for your brains.
He looked through the door of the half-bath. I could run a hose or gutter through the window and use the sink for a stand. He thought out loud. I'm going to try it here first, maybe tomorrow. There are some rain barrels along the big house.
You were overlooking a bigger issue on the horizon.
Rebecca grinned wryly.
What? Greg replied, true concern in his voice. Are you afraid the sewage is emptying into the river or pond?
At some point we are going to run out of toilet paper.
You should focus your attention on learning how to make soft, pliable tissue, rather than worrying about a toilet.
Oh my God, you're right. Greg had not considered toilet paper, tissues, paper towels, or even diapers as a fleeting resource.
Okay, Greg, let's get our shoes on and go.
She waited for him by the door. He walked over to his boots.
When did you plan on moving over here?
Was it when my uncles arrived? I bet you've been thinking about coming over here for months.
You know I'm a girl with a plan.
She flashed her confident smile.
It would be a hard winter here, but not too bad a spring, summer, or fall.
He laced his second boot. I know how you work. You can't fool me. He grabbed his coat and gave her one more hug and kiss before opening the door.
I'll never lie to you, but that doesn't mean I'm looping you in on all of my decisions.
She gripped his hand as they walked outside. It was cold. The wind shifted from a southern breeze to a northern gale.
"Urgh," she said. "I told everyone it was going to get cold again."
Patchy black clouds blew across the sky at a rapid pace. The sun was shining, but the temperature was dropping despite the sunshine. Greg and Rebecca planned a leisurely walk back to the house. Their plan changed to a quick trot. There was no one at the Choate Road house. Greg and Rebecca went to the cottage. Everyone was inside, crammed into the small building. Screams came from kids upstairs. Bernie was talking to Karen in the living room while Jamie and Peter sat next to each other on a couch.
The older kids were playing cards in the dining room. The kitchen was full of adults.
"Welcome back," Matt said to both of them. He sat at the table, a smart-ass grin on his face. "I hope you two had a nice afternoon."
"I appreciate that, Matt," Rebecca said to him.
She was not embarrassed or ashamed of her alone time.
"What are you up to?"
"We're playing spades, trying to pass the time. It's freezing outside. It cut our tennis game short, but not short enough that Avery didn't crush me in humiliating fashion."
Now it was Rebecca's turn to smile.
"She didn't tell you she played?"
"Must have slipped my mind."
Avery winked at her friend. "The joke's on the two of you," Matt told them. "I had fun anyway." He stuck his tongue out at Avery.
"Why are we all inside?" Greg asked. Tony put his cards on the table, making sure no one could see them. "It got cold and everyone freaked. We ended up in here. Hank had plans for some big pan on the grill, but now he's in there making dinner on the wood stove. I think everyone wants to eat so they can get out of here and go back to their own places."
He picked up his cards. "Now can we get back to me winning at cards?" He looked around the table.
"Thanks for the update." Greg gave Antonio a pat on the shoulder.
"Dad was looking for you," Matt told him, still grinning.
Rebecca noticed Avery was not playing. She was just watching the card game.
"How was tennis, really?" she asked her.
Avery got up and walked over to Rebecca.
"Forget tennis. Where were you two? It was the talk of the house for a little while. You two sneaking off for the afternoon and not telling anyone."
"Really?"
Rebecca feigned surprised.
"I guess. You know how it is. We lived alone for months. Then we only had Paul and Hank, who gave us space for the next 2 months. I'm not used to sharing a house with 12 people. I needed a break. It's my fault. I asked Greg to sneak off with me."
"Hey, don't apologize to me. You're right.
I'm not in your boat. They gave me my own room. Well, sort of. I do share it with Meredith, but she's cool. We have a house we can go to."
Avery gave her a small punch in the shoulder.
"Nice work, girlfriend, raising some heck in the house."
Rebecca blushed.
"Whatever," she replied. "Can you keep a secret?"
"You know I can."
"I fell asleep and napped the entire time."
"What?"
Avery said loudly, getting looks from the spades game table. She said it softly.
"What? You sneak away and all you did was fall asleep?" "Yes, honestly. It was the best nap I've had in a week. But that was it. We went to this little coach house we know about, lit a fire, ate the steak sandwich, and I passed out. How sad is that? I needed some space, some alone time. And I blew it on a nap."
Avery laughed. "Tennis was fun. I like Matt. He's funny. And pretty easy on the eyes."
She looked over at him.
"I'm going to see where it goes. I met him like a week ago. I don't have many options, but still, I don't want to start seeing a guy on the first day at a new school, right?"
"I think you have some time. You know his dad is seeing Solange now."
"Get out!"
Avery said loudly again. This time the conversation in the living room stopped and people turned.
"Subtle," Rebecca told her. "Anyway, yeah, they're staying in the same house. I saw him go into her place last night, and he told Matt about it after dinner. Wild, huh?"
The girls gossiped while the other teens played cards. Greg's conversation with his father did not go as Greg expected.
"Look," John said, "you are your own man now. I stopped being your boss when I hung up the phone last August. All I want you to do, and this is a request rather than an order, is to tell someone, anyone, Cameron if you want, where you are going and how long you'll be gone. You can even grab a radio. Just give us a way to connect with you if there's an emergency."
John sat at the kitchen table with Paul and Ahmed. They each had a glass of wine. Hank cooked dinner in a fantastically large pan he found at a restaurant in town.
"Okay, you're right. Rebecca, and I won't lay blame on her because I went on my own, wanted some alone time, a few hours without a crowd. I know you care, and I should have told you. It won't happen again."
Where did you go, anyway? Did you two keep some spots secret from me and Hank? Paul asked.
Greg smiled. You know we did. He blushed. There's a coach house behind one of the big houses on Balch Street. It's like an office or something, but it has a fireplace and a couch. We considered it for a living space, but it's just one room and a half bath.
The half bath would have been nice in the winter, Paul mumbled, more to himself than Greg.
All right, so if we can't find you, will it be safe to assume you're there? John asked.
It would be the first place you should look, Greg answered. And it's not that we don't like everyone. We love everyone. We like that everyone is here, but...
He paused.
Well, I'm used to being on my own, not sleeping in a house with 12 people, most of them under the age of 11. Matt, Rebecca, and I are the only older kids in the cottage.
John looked surprised, not because Greg was wrong, but because he had not thought about it.
You're right. I lumped you in with the kids, and you three aren't kids.
Whatever you want to do is fine with all of us. Let me know. Let any of us know, and we can help you find a bedroom with a fireplace, get you set up. You've earned it.
Well, this conversation didn't go as I thought it was going to,
Greg admitted. I knew I was in the wrong when I snuck away, but sometimes, you know, kids do things. I didn't realize I wasn't a kid anymore.
John smiled.
Yeah, I was mad. Your brother set me straight. He stood up and walked over to Greg, wrapping his arms around him. I'm your dad. That's never going to change. But now I'm your friend slash dad. That doesn't mean I want to know specifics of what you were doing at your coach house, but it means I'm not your boss. You are an equal in this tribe or group or whatever the hell we are.
They released their hug. Greg turned to his Uncle Hank at the stove.
What is that? It smells incredible.
Lobster risotto with roasted red pepper. Tastes better than it smells. I'll admit it's turning out damn good.
Sweat beads dripped down Hank's forehead from the heat of the wood stove. He wore a look of pride as he stirred his masterpiece.
Paul asked Greg a natural follow-up question.
Do you and Rebecca want to move over to the coach house?
The question was met with silence from the room. Paul looked around.
Hey, we're all adults, and he's earned it. You just said it yourself, John. I'm opening the door for him to walk through.
I appreciate that, Uncle Paul. I really do. Here's my honest answer. If we plan on staying in Hanover for a long time, yes. If we're here for another 2 or 3 weeks, no. We don't want to fracture the group, have us start pairing or even singling off until we're at our final location. Rebecca and I talked about it. She has a plan.
Paul and Hank laughed.
What? John asked.
Paul clued his brother in on the comment.
Well, as you spend more time with Rebecca, you'll realize she always has a plan. Typically, she's several steps ahead of you with her plan. Also, she's always prepared. Your son was making a joke.
Okay, Mr. Jokester. Why don't you feed and clean the animals this afternoon, since you decided to take the day for yourself?
John threw his thumb towards the fenced-in back barnyard.
I collected firewood this morning. It's not like I slacked off.
Greg, it's filling a trough with water and making sure they have food, maybe shoveling some crap into the trash can. Man up.
Ahmed spoke for the first time.
You know what? Dan wants to see how it is done. Grab him from upstairs. He's reading books or playing Nerf basketball up there.
I'll just do it while there's still sunlight.
Greg shuffled out the back door. Ahmed was right. It was not a hard job. The tough job was milking the goats in the morning, and even that was not difficult. Greg slipped on the pair of communal rubber work boots and barn coat they kept by the back door, and made quick work of the chores. The converted barnyard had a fence running around a small perimeter, and a ramp running into the screened-in porch on the side of the house. There were nesting spots for the chickens, and hay beds for the goats to use at night. The afternoon animal shift was easy and basic. Clean up poop, make sure the animals have clean hay for the night, check their water, and spread food on the ground for the chickens. Not much to it,
but essential to keeping the animals happy and producing. Greg heard the back door shut. Dan stood on the small landing.
Hey, Greg. I wanted to see what the job was back here. Okay if I help or watch?
Sure. I was just shoveling poop. If you want to put on some gloves, you can spread the feed. Maybe check the water?
Greg pointed towards a box of work gloves by the back door.
How was your first day with us? Greg asked.
Let's see, Dan started as he walked over to the feed pail. I slept until noon, came out and enjoyed a steak sandwich, played tennis. Living here isn't too bad.
Greg chuckled. You should try it in December. Not as much steak and tennis, and it feels like it gets dark at noon.
I was down the road a few miles. I know what you're talking about. From what I've been told, we're kicking back and enjoying a vacation before we move to Hawaii. New Hampshire in April is our vacation before we start our life in Hawaii.
Dan looked around the small yard.
I threw the feed. The water looks cleanish and full. Anything else?
If you open the door at the top of that ramp, see if I need to clean up in there and make sure the goats haven't eaten their beds and the chickens' beds. If they have, just throw some more hay down from one of the bales on the other side of the fence under that tarp.
Dan followed Greg's orders. A few minutes later, they were sitting on the back porch steps, watching chickens eat feed off the ground. The goats milled about.
You and I are lucky people, Dan said to the boy. Not because we survived the rapture.
That wasn't lucky, it was torture.
He put his elbow on Greg's shoulder.
This is lucky. Living like this, having potential again, having possibility again.
What do you mean?
I was living with two people that were driving me crazy. I was going to leave and try to survive on my own.
How long would you give me? A year? If my car breaks down and I don't find water, a week?
Maybe.
Yeah, well, I give you and Rebecca a year up here. I've heard you developed some fantastic trapping skills. And she is whip smart, but seriously, two more winters? If one of you gets sick, gets hurt?
He looked at Greg.
We were rescued.
That's damn lucky.
Did my dad send you out here?
Greg gave Dan a sideways look.
No.
He held up his hands.
Honest, I'm just making conversation.
We did get lucky.
Greg looked back to the goats.
Do you think they wonder how they went from North Carolina, where it's warm, to New England, where it snows? You think the goats are like, what the heck is this?
The goats aren't from here?
Dan did not know the backstory.
I guess it makes the joke hard to understand if you don't know where the goats are from.
No, my aunt and uncle had them in Raleigh, along with two-thirds of the chickens. Rebecca and I had 10 this winter. Well, we started with 10, went down to 5. But that was more than enough to keep us in eggs.
We had fish and lobster, lots of lobster. I would have killed for some eggs or meat. Once the snow flew, we didn't do much by way of hunting or fishing.
He put his hand on Greg's leg, gave it a pat, and stood up. Like I said, we are two lucky guys to get rounded up like we did.
I'll tell you the story of my month in my school dorm, or the 2 weeks it took me to find Rebecca. I was one meal away from eating cat food. It confirms your belief that I'm lucky.
I'd like that. Maybe we can share stories about our initial weeks during the flight.
Did you hear the one about the two little girls and boy walking half of Manhattan?
Greg heard the story secondhand from Matt.
Like I said, we can compare notes during the flight. Let's go in and see how long before we eat. The house smells wonderful.
Dan opened the door and went inside. He kicked off his boots by the back door and started talking to people as soon as he got to the kitchen. He was a social person, fun, nice, and his true personality was bottled up for months in Boston. He felt joy around the new people and families.
The weather turned worse, and temperatures dropped back into the 30s, a needed reminder of how fickle and harsh New England weather is. The rain and sleet made it impossible to use the outdoor pizza oven. Todd and Ahmed moved their production into the Italian restaurant in downtown Hanover, lighting the commercial brick oven and inviting everyone to join them for pizza night. They made goat's milk mozzarella cheese and found canisters of grated Parmesan cheese in pantries around the town. People enjoyed sausage and cheese pizzas for the first time in close to a year. Kelly and Hank spent the day tending to the animals at the dairy farm. They were back in time for pizzas and wine. They reported that one cow was producing milk again, not in any quantity, but producing nonetheless. Dinosaur rock, controlled by the adults, played from speakers, and candles lit the building. The little kids danced and laughed, and the adults drank a few too many glasses of wine. People were happy and comfortable in Hanover. Peter approached Antonio at the party.
"Tony, I need to ask for your help."
Antonio and Peter had only exchanged cordial hellos up to this point in their relationship.
"I want to go to the airport, the one an hour away. I was hoping tomorrow or the next, and I think I might need help getting the plane started. I heard about how great a job you did with the boats and, well, road trip.
Nice."
Antonio stuck out his hand and shook Peter's.
"Yeah, I'm in. Anything I can do to help. I don't know anything about airplanes, but if an engine is an engine, I'll give it a go."
"Great."
Peter turned to walk away before spinning around.
"You know, I want to teach someone how to fly. Just some basics in case I need help. Any chance you want to log some time with me? Get some flying lessons over the next week or so?"
"That would be crazy."
"Yeah, hell yeah. Give it up, Peter."
Antonio put his hand out again, but this time his elbow was bent so his hand was more at chest level. Peter imitated the motion and shook hands awkwardly. Their chests were inches apart. Antonio smiled and nodded his head.
"Pilot Antonio. Damn, does that sound good."
He walked off to tell the other teens. Rebecca found Peter later in the evening.
"You should go tomorrow, you know, to Manchester. The snow will start to fly on Wednesday. You don't want to drive in the snow or on slick, icy roads."
"That's good advice. I didn't have any plans tomorrow anyway. Might as well knock it out."
Peter went off to find Paul and Todd to see if they were interested in going. 50. The rain stopped the next morning, but the clouds remained as Peter, Antonio, Emily, Meredith, and Paul raced down the highway towards Manchester. Meredith wanted an adventure and asked if she could tag along. It was her first time away from Avery since her family died.
"Why not?"
was Peter's response to her request to join him. They pulled into the airport, speeding away from the parking garage and parking lot tents, straight to the backside of the terminal. Emily stopped the Suburban once she was through the open gate and onto the runway. The fuel trucks were to her right. The planes were off in the distance on her left.
"Which way?" she asked Peter.
Peter pointed left.
"Drive down to the planes. Let's see if there's a stair truck. Pilots had to get out of those planes somehow once they drove them down there."
"We're looking for a pickup with a set of stairs on it?"
Meredith asked, poking her head between the front seats.
"Like that one?"
She pointed to the right, next to the fuel trucks. Parked beside the last terminal gate was a truck with stairs running up the back of the cab.
"Exactly," Peter said. "Like I said, let's go over there and get that truck started. One of us can drive it to the planes."
Emily turned the SUV right instead of left and drove to the stair truck. The door to the truck was unlocked and the keys were in the ignition. It did not turn over.
"Do we want to use the new battery or jump the old one?"
Emily asked Antonio through the window.
"Let's jump it if we can. I like keeping a spare in case our battery dies. Roadside assistance isn't all that reliable anymore."
The new Antonio was intelligent, practical, and a hard worker. Emily wondered why his attitude and work ethic had done such a 180. What made him join a gang in the first place? He appeared to have a loving father, a good family, siblings he cared about. Maybe one day she would ask him. She also thought about letting the past go and enjoying the new man blossoming in front of her. She popped the hood for Antonio. He pulled 12-foot jumper cables out of the back of the SUV. He connected the batteries, waited a few seconds, and the stair truck came to life. It had plenty of gas. "You mind if I take it over? I like driving things like this," Antonio asked hopefully.
"Just don't get close to the plane until I get out and..."